Hey, I know what'll cheer you up.
Welcome to the Bright Ideas Podcast, where we let proven experts help you to find the next bright idea to implement in your business today. And now, here's your host, Trent Deersmith.
This is unbelievable. This true force has never been fully understood.
Hey there, Bright Idea Hunters. Welcome back to episode number 147 of the Bright Ideas Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Deersmith. And this is the podcast where we help entrepreneurs to discover ways to use digital marketing and marketing automation to dramatically increase the growth of their business. So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking for proven tactics and strategies to help you increase traffic, increase conversions, and ultimately your profits, well, my friends, you are in the right place. And the way that we do that is we bring on experts and we get them to share with us exactly what they did to become successful. So no theories and no puffery. Just, hey, here's what I accomplished. Here's how I did it step by step by step by step. And this episode, of course, is absolutely no different. However, in this episode, my guest is a woman by the name of Paige Campbell, and she is the CEO of a marketing agency by the name of Grady Britton. And we did this interview because Paige, first of all, was an employee of Grady Britton, and along with her business partner, ended up buying the firm from the prior owners, because it's a very old firm. It's been around for about 40 years. And then subsequent to that, they went on to buy two more agencies. And so really the focus of this interview is whether you're looking to get bought or whether you're looking to buy, you are going to find great insights when you listen to the conversation that Paige and I have. We talk about how to get that, if you're a seller, how to get that conversation with potential buyers started in a way that does not show weakness. So, because that would obviously negatively impact your negotiation position. We talk about what the buyer looks for in the due diligence process. We talked about what are realistic expectations of the seller in terms of exit and the terms of the deal, how it's going to be structured. Because if you haven't sold before, it's not all about price. The terms of payment are oftentimes even more important than the price. For example, I'll give you $1 billion for your firm, but I'm going to pay you $1 per year over a billion years. That wouldn't be a very good deal, even though the price sounded very high. So this is really going to be an interesting interview for you if, like I say, you are thinking of selling or you are thinking of buying. And before we get to it, just a very quick announcement. I get a lot of emails from people asking me, Trent, what are all the tools that you use to run your business? And so I have a list of all those tools and you can get to it at grabtrentsbonus.com. And as that URL name would suggest to you, when you use one of the affiliate links on that page, and I get a little commission from whosoever software that you're buying, I give you the opportunity to choose from one of my paid products, and I'm going to give it to you for free as a bonus, as a thank you for using my affiliate link. So with that said, please join me in welcoming Paige to the show. Oh, and I should say that this episode, we had two technical glitches. I've never had in 190 some interviews, two technical glitches. And so apologies in advance for the conversation being interrupted, not once, but twice due to these technical glitches. Hi, Paige. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Trent.
It's a pleasure to have you on. We're going to talk about all sorts of interesting things here today with respect to the acquisition of other agencies. And my hope is that the folks listening to this, whether they're looking to buy an agency or whether they're looking to sell their agency, are going to learn all sorts of interesting things from the buyer's perspective. And that's being you, because you've bought two agencies. But before we get into any of that, I'd like to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to my audience so they know who they're listening to and give them some context for all the great stuff that we're about to hear. So please tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Paige Campbell, and I'm the president of an advertising marketing agency in Portland, Oregon. The agency's name is Grady Britton, and agency's been in business for the past 40 years. Actually, it's our 40-year anniversary this year, and have transitioned over the decades to be really a brand-focused agency. We do a lot of content development, social work, a lot of digital campaigns for clients in the Pacific Northwest, mostly, with a national presence.
Okay. So either you weren't the founder or you are the youngest-sounding 75-year-old I have ever heard of.
It's true, yeah. No, not the founder. I am neither Grady nor Britton. Both of those names have since retired. Mm-hmm. I began purchasing the agency from the original founder, which was Frank Grady, about, let's see, five or six years ago now, and then became the president 3 years ago. And I have a business partner, Andy Askren, who is our chief creative officer and also owns 50% of the company with myself.
Okay. So let's dive into a couple of details. Just roughly what size is your company? How many people work there?
The agency is 21 people, so mid-sized in the Portland market.
Okay. And what size customer do you guys deal with?
A huge range. On the larger side, we work with a couple of one large chip manufacturer that will remain to be unspoken in the Portland area on the B2B side, which is probably our largest account. And then also on the consumer national side, we work with clients, I'd say 50 to 200 million. I mean, it kind of really depends on the industry. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of travel, destination, marketing, food and beverage, and industrial B2B work.
Okay. So there's going to be some people listening to this who maybe work for an agency and would like to own one day. And I know that in our pre-interview, I discovered that at one point you didn't want to become an owner, but eventually did. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how you went from being an employee of this agency to being an owner? And let's spend a little bit of time on that. And then I want to spend a lot more time, probably the bulk of our time, on how you have purchased two other agencies, because there's quite a number of details that I want to get into in that part of the conversation.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So I had worked in the agency business prior to working at Grady Britton at four other agencies and kind of worked my way up in the business from receptionist. Actually, it was my first job at an agency, and was director of client services at Grady Britton. At the time, my predecessor, Frank Grady, he was doing succession planning, and I think he had a couple of options to be purchased himself or grow the agency to a certain size that would be more attractive, you know, to an outside party, or to sell the agency to a team within or an individual within. When he first, asked myself and two other people here if they were interested in joining together and purchasing the agency, my business partner said yes, very, very enthusiastically. That has always been something that I've wanted to do. Whereas I, at the exact same moment, said no, I would never be interested in doing that. I think at the time it seemed, a little bit overwhelming to me, and I didn't know the first thing about running an agency. And I had just never envisioned that for myself. And so I was real quick to say no. Thankfully, I had two people, my partner now and also my predecessor, who were very patient with me and gave me a lot of time to explore the notion. And we had ongoing conversations, and I did some work myself, personal work, to figure out if this is what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And try to make an educated and smart decision. And eventually I just came to the conclusion that, I was committed to this industry. I wasn't going anywhere. And eventually I would probably tire of being a director of client services, and I'd be looking for something more and more challenging. And so when I really came to that conclusion, I said, well, the next step for me would be ownership. And, why not? Here I have this opportunity. And it's remarkable, and there's a reason that exists, and I should probably go for it.
So did you initially say no because you thought that it would be too risky to become an owner?
Yes.
Okay. So
yes. Absolutely.
Let's hang out on that one for a second, because I think that that's something that people would like to hear. Why did you think it was risky? And then as you made the transition and changed your mind and, of course, became an owner, did those fears end up being real, or were they just fear?
Okay. Yeah. There's a little bit of all of that in what actually happened. I definitely am a conservative person in nature, especially financially. For me, it was incredibly risky. I am also a single mom. And so, you know, most of my livelihood is in the equity of my home, for example. And I would, in the case of putting a down payment down on the agency and subsequent payments and so on, I was going to become personally liable. This was also in 2007, pre-recession. But as we moved forward and actually the deal became, you know, more realistic and like it was going to happen, and I was kind of coming to terms with that, and also speaking with the creative director at the time, who's now my partner, and we were determining if we would be good business partners, for example. There was a lot of things going on at the same time, but the financial risk was paramount for me. And I think what ended up happening in my mind was I played the game of, it's kind of like a mortgage. And if I can get over the fact of the large amount that I felt, you know, I was going to be strapped to 4 years, and treated it like a mortgage in the sense of every time I make a payment, I'm putting equity into something, then it didn't seem as large and terrifying. what happened as a result was, we signed the deal, and about 6-7 months later, the economy fell out, and the agency really went through a tough time with layoffs. And, you know, I basically had everything at stake in the business, and so there was no choice. So when you're in that situation, there's literally no choice, and you just work like you've never worked before, and you dig in and do everything that you can. And so my partner and I were both in that situation, and, you know, definitely with the lot to lose side of it, and kind of a mental strength about not allowing that to happen. And so, you know, here we are today. The agency is thriving, and we are hiring 2 more people this month. So we'll be at 23 now, and we just kind of dug our way out and made sure that we found a way to be successful. But yeah, I think the difficulty, I think, was definitely the fear of the financial risk and the livelihood of my family and so on.
So when the economy went into the tank, the terms of the deal had already been negotiated and they didn't get renegotiated?
Yeah. That when we went in, when the economy went in the tank, yeah, the deal was signed. And the immediately, I mean, within 8 months of the deal being signed, that agency was not worth what we had signed for. We worked under that premise and made continual payments and so on for probably, I'd say, 2 or 3 more years. At that time, the economy was still not in recovery mode, and we changed slightly the terms of the deal and re-signed on that, lowering our interest rate and, you know, some things like that.
Okay.
So now, you know, the terms have been slightly modified to our benefit.
You know, there's something that you spoke there that I'm going to go back to, because I went through it personally as well, and I really want people to have a takeaway. And you did what I call embracing economic pressure. In other words, you buried yourself deeply in debt. And I, with my last company, I did the same thing. I remember there was a point when I was hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, and the company wasn't profitable yet, but it was sure awfully close. And, you know, at that point, you really just can't give up, because it is your economic ruin if you do.
Right.
And the magical thing that happened to you, and it happened to me, is that you dig deep and you go to personal resources that maybe you didn't know that you had, and you get it done. And in your case, it worked out very well. In my case, it worked out very well. So I bring that up only because I know one of the things that people who have smaller agencies, or maybe they're even independent marketing consultants, really struggle with is how do I get, you know, from being this team of one to a team of a few? And it might not be the right decision for everybody, and I don't dispel financial advice on my show, but I would just say listen to what Paige just said and listen to what I just said about embracing debt as a form of forcing commitment on yourself. And maybe that debt is used to hire some additional people to help you, you know, become more productive and get more done and stop doing everything yourself. Don't necessarily be afraid of it. Before we move on, Paige, is there anything?
True. And I think that it is, I actually, in the moment, I'll be honest, I didn't think of it like that. I just had no choice.
Me too.
I had nothing else that was an option except digging down and figuring out how to survive out of this. And so I like the way that you framed it. I did learn a ton about myself. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone, but I also wouldn't ever have give up that experience. I know what it means to run lean now. I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. I know what indicators to watch in my business. And there's really no better education.
Yeah, you couldn't have bought that one in college. Not for any amount of money. And the great thing with this is you get your tuition back. It's called future earnings.
Yeah.
Okay. So now people have a little bit of an idea of how you came to be an owner of an agency. And obviously it wasn't a horrific experience because you've gone out and bought two more.
Yeah. Matter of fact, acquisition was part of the strategy to get out of that place that we were. The first, the business was changing a lot. The market was really unstable. Typical business for us would have been AOR relationships, long-term contracts, things like that. All of our those relationships, we still have relationships with, but their budgets had moved to like projects, by project basis. Their internal teams were being let go. And so there was really no, I didn't have projections anymore. I used to be able to look out and see, at least for the quarter, what I expected, and to some degree for the year. And not really having that anymore, there had to be another way to stabilize the agency. An opportunity presented itself to acquire an agency that wasn't faring through the recession very well. And I would say that, we weren't certainly in a position of strength, but I think we were a little bit more secure than they were. And thankfully, we have a good reputation in town, and the owners of that agency reached out to us as well as a couple of other agencies and opened up the conversation to ask if anyone was interested or able to acquire at that time. And we were interested. The agency that we were, that offered the conversation had a nice makeup of roster and talent that was very, very complementary to what we were doing. I think that was a key thing that I know now, and I should have applied that into our second acquisition. I didn't, but I should have. And what was great about it is that the first acquisition really complemented the services that we already had, but wasn't duplicative. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they were unable to have like all full internal creative teams and full internal digital teams, and they were struggling to bring a great creative product to their clients, and the clients were taking note of that, whereas we had a lot of capacity in our creative and digital teams in-house. And so there were just a lot of places where the puzzle pieces fit naturally together on kind of a logistics and tactical way. On the other side of it, having a deep look at culture and really what was going on at that agency and what the talent was there and did that fit with our agency and things like that. And the stars really aligned nicely. of course, it was risky in the sense, financially, we were in the thick of a recession. We're looking for a way to stabilize the agency, but there's definitely an acquisition cash going out the other way. So you have to, you know, figure out financially future, you know, you're buying the future. There's no
Let me interrupt you for
assets.
A moment. Let me interrupt you for
a moment. Sorry, Trent.
That's okay. So we're going to come to the financial aspect of it in a minute, but there's some other details I want to dig into from both the buyer and seller's perspective, and you now have the ability to give insight to both. So from the buyer's perspective, the primary reason that you wanted to acquire this agency after they approached you was because you saw some talent and some capabilities that would bolt in very nicely with your team, and your bench would get stronger as a result. Does that more or less sum it up?
That is half the equation. The other half would be I saw a client base that had long-term capability to stabilize the agency financially.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nobody's buying just expenses. Everybody wants to get
just for talent.
Revenue as well. You can hire for that. Okay. And now for here's what I want to find out. What advice, having received this phone call from an agency that was struggling a little bit, what advice would you give to other people who might be thinking, hey, I'm struggling a little. Maybe I want to sell my agency, but I don't want to come across as, you know, too weak or too vulnerable when I make this call or these calls to potential suitors. So what advice would you give to that person who's trying to market their company to start conversations the right way with a firm or firms that might be interested in buying them?
Sure. I think, you know, something that's really important is start small, you know, start with a couple of people in the industry or other peers in your city that you're friends with, that you have a relationship with, that you've competed against and respect, or a couple of people that you've known in the business for a while that you can explore it with. I think you should always come to the table with, you know, we're exploring a lot of options. There's, you know, whether you're just tired and kind of went out of the business or you're retiring or whatever the situation is, it's like, I'm exploring a couple of different options in succession planning or moving this agency to the next level. One of them is acquisition or selling. And I wanted to reach out to you because I've always respected you or whatever, you know, and, and kind of approach it that way. If you keep a lot of options on the table and be open about that, you know, so it's an exploratory conversation. The agency might just be, no, we're not interested in acquiring. We've done it before, or no, you know, whatever the case is. And then you truly are just kind of doing a little bit of research into what's going to make most sense for your agency, and keep your agency at the forefront of what's best for the people there or best for yourself, and looking for a future match. You're selling something that will, the benefit to you will come in the future too. So be really careful who you start engaging with in the conversation.
Now, for the two agencies that you've purchased, and forgive me if I'm getting my facts astray, but if I recall our pre-interview correctly, the two agencies is not including the agency that you became a principal of. You've bought two more since then? Okay. So the second one, did they approach you as well, or did you approach them?
On the second one, they did approach us, but they had heard out in the market that we might be looking. And so that owner heard that via a little bit of word of mouth, which it was true that we were looking. And so he then approached us.
Okay. And roughly what size were these two companies in terms of number of people or revenue, whatever you want to disclose?
Right. The first agency, I think they were around 10 people, 10 to 11 people in-house at the time we acquired them. The second agency was about the same, 10 to 12.
Okay, so these are probably somewhere between $1 million and $1.5 million a year in revenue.
Yeah, I believe the first one was a little bit larger than that. I'd say 2.5. The second one was around that size, yes.
Okay. So when you have a company of that size to sell, do you think that it is reasonable for the seller to expect, you know, they're going to get a cash payment and walk away? And if not, what is the more likely outcome for them?
Sure. No, I don't think it's reasonable to expect that. The buying agency is, and you as a seller are, you're selling the future possibility there. The buyer's buying the future possibility. There's a lot of things that have to work to actually move those accounts and that talent into, you know, actually being profitable and becoming what the buyer's looking for. In our case, was stabilizing our own agency to another degree. And so, you know, knowing that situation and the first one, I mean, we were not interested in putting a big cash payment out. I think the seller knew that this was going to be a buyout over term, over a certain period of time, based on the profitability or based on the revenue generated by the clients that they were selling. And so I think it's, if you're selling, you should remember that there isn't any hard assets that anyone's benefiting from that you actually should look for. And sometimes sellers stay a part of the acquisition for 6 months or, you know, something to transition the business. So that definitely has, if that's going to happen, that needs to be considered the compensation negotiation, all sorts of stuff.
Did that happen in either of the two purchases, or did you say, we'll pay you out over time, but you don't got to work there anymore?
In both situations, we did say that. We will buy you out over time, but we want to transition the business ourselves. In both situations, though, we brought over the key staff that really owned the relationships. And kind of, this is unique now that I think about it, but in both cases, the previous owner was not interested in coming over and transitioning the business.
And did these two agencies, were they mostly project revenue models, or did they have high levels of retainer income?
The first one was more ongoing relationship. That's relationships with our clients, which is what we were mostly interested in. I don't think if they would have been project based, we probably wouldn't have done it. We were looking for ongoing business, and that's what was attractive to us. The second acquisition was a digital agency. They were running more on a project by project basis, and we were interested in that agency for other reasons.
You
know, they had some digital capability in-house that we didn't. We were looking to build out and have a much more robust digital arm. They had some developing talent and capability in there that we are attracted to. They also, which this was kind of unique, they did have one large ongoing digital account that they were running a substantial amount of business with every month. In our digital arm of our agency, you know, we've been running largely project to project, and I wanted a big stabilizing agency or account that specifically fed into that arm within our structure instead of running project to project. So I was attracted by the big piece of business and then the additional capability that it would bring to our whole department.
Okay. And in either case of these two acquisitions, you know, before you make an agreement with the seller, you know who their clients are, but you're not able to go out and talk to the clients. So you have to
That's right.
Of take them at their word that the client relationship is intact. And the terms of your agreement obviously are going to support that fact. In other words, if a client goes away, then, you know, you're not going to pay as much.
Did you
run into, what was it like once you made a deal and you started to tell the clients, you know, hey, and I'm assuming you would have acquired the key account managers that own those relationships, and then those people would have said to the folks at the clients, you know, hey, we've been bought, blah, 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 blah. Is that kind of how it went?
Okay, the first part, yes, you aren't, of course, you can't go and speak to the clients before, but you do need to do some due diligence there. So what we did was, of course, in meeting with the owner and presidents of the agencies, when we got serious, you know, letter of intent was now signed, we were getting real serious about doing the due diligence around this. We did a lot of talking about the client relationships, about the culture of the clients, about how well they thought that they would transition, about the key personnel and staff, what the client was used to, what they thought they were looking for in the future, where they've been underserved perhaps, you know, all of that kind of internal work. And then we interviewed each of the staff members that were in relationship or held a relationship with those clients to see if we heard reoccurring themes. And information. In the case of the first acquisition we did, we trusted the information a lot. We trusted those account managers a lot. You could tell in talking to them that they really had great relationships with these clients. And we felt if we could secure them and make them, you know, feel like this was going to be a great net outcome for them to actually have their agency be acquired and come into our culture and our environment, that this could be successful. They really had great, solid relationships. And from hearing that information, their clients were looking for things that we really could provide. And this account service staff was excited to be a part of an agency that could really bring a holistic viewpoint to these clients. So everything just kind of lined up. On the second one, it was a little more precarious. The previous owner was, with the day-to-day of these relationships.
Sorry, we're having a little bit of a bandwidth issue here. I'm not quite sure what the problem is, but are you able to hear me okay?
So with the second one, it was a little bit different. When we spoke with the owner at length again, which was a similar process, and gathered a bunch of information about the clients and just kind of where they were with them. And then when we interviewed some of the team that worked there, we heard kind of differing perspectives. And so this really kind of put things into question for us because we felt that, you know, the account managers were really the people on the day-to-day. They would have the better indicators, I guess, of what could be possible. And we felt that the owner was a little bit maybe out of touch with the day-to-day work. And so it was really important at that point to make a decision to bring all of the account team over. And also the agency was different. Running project to project stuff, they had more of a sales approach versus an ongoing relationship management approach, because doing a lot of websites, a lot of digital work, it was project based. They'd work with a client for 4 to 6 months and then move on to kind of the next project. So there wasn't as much looking out to the future. It was more of, can these people continue to sell digital work and kind of across the board? And we were just going to transition the current projects in the queue, complete them under contract, maintain the large piece of business, which is what we were really attracted to in the first place, and then continue to sell digital work across the agency.
Okay, so they had one kind of key client that was really very desirable for you?
Yeah, it was. It was just a large size of ongoing month-to-month digital work.
Okay.
And that was attractive to us because our digital team had also been kind of running project to project, and you're always kind of filling that pipeline. And I was attracted to the idea of having a nice, big, stable piece of business that was on a month-to-month kind of retainer structure to support, you know, the times in between the next big project coming in, that type of a thing.
So what advice, when you go from letter of intent, which is kind of like the first date of mergers and acquisitions, where you say, this is kind of what I'm interested in, here's the terms, blah, blah, blah. And then you go into due diligence and you uncover things that undermine your confidence, or you start to realize that the person you're about to go on a date with is a little different than you thought they were. What advice would you give to buyers or sellers for handling the negotiation that is going to be required to alter the terms to now match the new reality. And let's do this from the, let's say you're the buyer, which you were. And so you're, let's give advice to other sellers. Let's give advice to sellers. So what would you say to people that would be in that situation where you as the buyer now don't want to pay as much as you said you would pay in the letter of intent because the situation you have uncovered is different than what they told you?
Right. I would definitely look at it from the perspective of is whatever occurred, whatever changed, really going to affect the future of the business? There's always a scale, you know, from one perspective, from the buyer's perspective, yes, it's going to greatly affect the possibility of the future of the business. From the sellers, you have the background of knowing your clients and knowing your team and really how solid or what situations those are in. And you can make more of an educated renegotiation around that. You have the benefit of having all of that knowledge and experience that the buyer doesn't have. So they're gonna want to not take as big a risk, of course. And I think that you have a lot of means to assure them if you actually think that it's not posing as big a risk or threat to the future of the business as the buyer might think. In the case of the second acquisition, that exact thing happened. There was a key talent that we were hoping to have join us with the acquisition. Things were all lined up at the last minute that creative director took another opportunity in the market and left. That we weren't, it wasn't at risk in that none of the clients that the agency was servicing at the time would have jumped ship with this person. That wasn't what the concern was. But that person was part of the talent that we were hoping to acquire and transition in here. So the value of the company actually shifted.
Was it by a meaningful amount?
I think from the perspective of the seller, yes. Mm-hmm. You bet. But the seller also agreed that we as an agency had done everything that we could to bring this person over. And I think that they knew that and actually agreed with that. And so, you know, I wasn't willing any longer to you know, that affected how I looked at the future quite substantially.
Okay. So now at this point, you're getting, let's assume for the purposes of our discussion, that you're getting towards the end of due diligence, and the buyer and the seller have pretty much in principle agreed on everything. Somebody has to paper this deal up so that you can actually get it done. Is that where you brought the attorneys in? Did you?
Yeah, actually, our attorney was involved from the get-go, from the point of the letter of intent, and served as my counsel, you know, because from that very beginning, you're kind of looking at the things that you need to ask, the information that you're going to need. You know, when are you reviewing the financial information? That needs to come up pretty early in the game. And my attorney was partnered with me through all of that work. Because you start to frame your negotiation just as the data and information comes in. Mm-hmm. You're talking about where you see risks, what makes you uncomfortable, if we could pencil out a deal that was somewhere in this range, I'd feel comfortable. You know, you're kind of funneling down to knowing that deal is going to be the end result. So I wouldn't hesitate to get an attorney involved early on who's going to, you know, you as you're going along in these things, you can get deal heat. I mean, you start looking out at the possibility of this, the possibility of that, missed talent, and you can quickly get your eye off the ball and forget what your objective was in doing this thing from the beginning, and having that counsel say, you know, slow down. It's not worth it to pay this amount, or, you know, to continue to provide that counsel and that grounding effect is very helpful.
How much did you have to spend on legal fees?
Oof, let's see. I can't remember on the first one. My predecessor, Frank Grady, was still here and we were doing that deal together. I was already an owner, but he kind of worked that mm-hmm. side of it. On the second one, I probably spent probably $15,000.
Okay. So really $15,000 of insurance to make sure that
yeah.
the rest of – and $15,000 relative to just roughly what was that deal worth?
Well, I'm not going to disclose the total. In the whole scheme of things, it's very minor okay. compared to the future benefit that we've gained from that acquisition.
Yeah. Okay.
So I would easily do it again.
Okay. So well worth it.
The deal was definitely negotiated, I feel like, at this point.
All right, Paige. So a computer crash and a bandwidth problem later. This is probably the most technically challenged interview I've ever done. And we've both lost our train of thought by now. So let's try to put closure on this in just a couple of minutes, because I know that you have a hard stop that you're moving up against. So for folks that want to either buy or sell, are there any books or are there any websites that you would suggest? And also, if they wanted to get in touch with you, what is a good way for them to do that?
Sure. They can get in touch with me via my website at bradybritton.com. On the contacts page, they can reach out to me via email. It's probably the best bet.
Okay. And can you just spell that for us? Because some folks are
sure.
looking for that.
It's GRADYBRITTON.com.
Okay.
And in regards to blogs or websites or books, I didn't really rely on any of those as resources through this process. I had a couple of good business peers that I relied on, and I mentioned had an attorney that counseled me and kept me grounded, and just other people in the business who had done it before. I belong mm-hmm. to a kind of a unique group of other agency presidents, and so I relied on them just to ask more of the tactical situational stuff. Have you ever agreed to a deal that comprised mm-hmm. of something like this? Mm-hmm. Things like that.
And it was very much the same for me, being I haven't bought firms yet, but I've sold. So folks, if you have questions from the seller's perspective, put them in the comments and I'll be sure and answer them. But I echo Paige's comments. Your legal counsel has been through this many times before, if you've picked the right one. There are all sorts of entrepreneur groups that, I was in several mastermind groups, as I suspect Paige just alluded to the fact she's in one as well. Mm-hmm. And that can be incredibly valuable. The big thing is you really want to make sure that you talk to people who have actually done it before.
Yeah.
Because in the scope of a 3/4 hour podcast, we could talk all, there are people who do workshops on this stuff for days. The number and complexity of the details involved in a merger or acquisition of any kind are very, very large. Don't let it discourage you. Just go into it being aware that it is,
yeah.
it takes a while. These things do not happen overnight.
Yeah, eyes wide open for sure. And in both cases, I'll tell you, the first one, it probably took a total of a year to actually go through the process, actually from the beginning to the end, to move in and actually having people established and seeing the benefit of the work coming into the agency. Mm-hmm. It's a long, long deal. The second one was equally as long and actually a little bit more tumultuous. So both times, yeah, eyes wide open. Eye on the ball and understand that it's going to be a large part of what you do and focus on mm-hmm. For the immediate future for sure.
And with that said, if advice to sellers, if you think there's any way that you can do succession planning and sell your firm to people that already work there, speaking from personal experience, mm-hmm. You're going to get more money because those buyers know exactly what they're buying. You can get that deal done a lot quicker. There's not nearly the level of due diligence that's required. In my case, the deal was done inside of 30 days. And I would encourage you to start planting those seeds several years in advance of you.
That's right.
Be there.
Very much so. Yeah, several years. So people have really understand what they're taking on, and their interest and passion and commitment is there, and it's been tested. And it's a whole different beast moving from just an employee to ownership, and it behooves both of you to try that on a little bit as you go before the deal's done.
Mm-hmm. All right, Paige, I know we're up against your hard stop now and mine as well. I got to get on the phone and do a pre-interview with another founder. So thank you very much for being a part of the show. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and I really apologize to you and the audience that you were cut off mid-sentence due to my computer crashing, which has never, ever
okay.
happened before.
Good luck to you. Thank you, Trent, and good luck to everybody.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, to get to the show notes for this episode, go to breadideas.co/147. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor and help me spread the word by going to breadideas.co/love, where there's a pre-populated tweet, and all you got to do is click your mouse. That one came out all wrong, but you get the idea. All right, so that's it for this episode. I am your host, Trent Deersmid. Thank you so very much for tuning in. It's been my pleasure as always, and I look back forward to rather to having you back for another episode when I can talk better than I can today. So that's it. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for listening to the Bright Ideas Podcast. Check us out on the web at brightideas.co.
All right, show's over. I'm tired.